yeah.
Hello.
We are back. We told y'all we weren't going to make you wait another year as we did in 2022.
Only a few months.
Only a few months. And really about two and a half. So for us, in our recent schedule, it's pretty good.
Yes. That's a win. I hope this is like our craziest season ever. Just jam-packed with at least three or four episodes.
Right. That's right. Ambitious stuff. So yeah, here we are. It's summer. Yeah, it's been a rainy summer here in Athens, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. It was storming here today. We don't know where everyone else lives. I assume at least two of our listeners live in Athens.
I would think so. And my sister, when I was on vacation, we were up in Port Townsend, Washington, reminded me that she and her brother-in-law, living in Germany, are our two biggest fans. Two of our biggest fans, at least.
That's amazing.
Themselves our two biggest fans, you know, from their perspective. So they're very excited that we're doing another episode.
We're very thankful for the fans we have.
I'm pretty sure my sister hasn't watched a single movie that we talk about, but she's absolutely going to watch and listen to every episode.
She's my Aaron Wu.
Hopefully not watch it or else she'd be really bored.
But we
talked about doing a video cast at some point, so maybe we'll try that sometime.
That might be down the line. Carrie, what have you been watching lately?
Oh my gosh. So you've got a bunch, I know. I've only had a couple. It's been a really, really busy summer, but two in particular. I'll start with one of them. So we have a movie club. In it, when we watched Renfield, the new movie from Chris McKay, did Lego Movie. Tomorrow
I can't War, believe I haven't seen it.
All that. Yeah. It's his newest film. Horror, comedy, definitely big on the comedy. It's really a third of it is a romantic comedy as well. You got Nicholas Holt, Awkwafina, and Nick Cage. And after seeing some restrained performances by Nick Cage in movies like Pig and even Mandy, which is a fairly restrained performance from him, here he goes all the way, full on, Nick Cage, full Cage.
That Staggering Genius movie, he was like full Cage too. I think that's the best Cage.
I think it is too, although I have to say, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, I absolutely
Massive
love
Talent.
That
That's
movie.
What I'm thinking
I loved
of.
It.
Yeah.
And he had some moments in that one where he kind of pulled it back anyway. But in this one, he just goes for it. I mean, he's absolutely ridiculous, completely silly. Nicholas Holt's a nice kind of straight man to Nick Cage's Vampire Madness. And it's really Nicholas Holt's movie. He's in the movie a lot. You know, it's about him dealing with, he's in a support group, folks who are codependent. On others, of course, as Renfield is obviously codependent to Dracula. Awkwafina is a police officer who starts to figure out that something weird is going on while these murders start happening and the city and all that. And she and Nick Holt start to form a relationship of some sort. The movie's fun. I mean, it's not great. I think I wanted to be a little bit better or a little bit wilder than it was, but it still is a lot of fun.
What's the gore like?
The gore has some, there's some good gory moments in it, actually. There's some using some arms as weapons and things like that. You know, there's some good stuff in there. I think for me, it was just that the last third of the movie becomes a romantic comedy. And I felt like it lost a lot of its sort of energy at that time. And I don't know if Nick Holt and Awkwafina have the much chemistry either, romantically, even though they're both, I think, really good actors. But the first half of that movie, totally worth watching. If you're a Cage fan, you got to see it.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Cage fan, and I'm a champion of anything Awkwafina.
Yes, no, she's great. All right, what you got?
So, Oliver, another one of our loyal listeners,
yes,
lent me his VHS of Retribution from 1987.
Have we heard of this movie.
I had neither.
Who, anyone notable directing it?
I think the last name is Major, and that's totally pulling from memory, but what's important is, have we talked about Eyes of Fire, Carrie?
Okay, that's a classic folk horror that did show up on Shudder last year. It's on my queue. I've not seen it.
You have to watch it, but you should watch Retribution first, because it's the guy who is the horny preacher in in Eyes of Fire. He
Gotta love
is
the horny
in
preacher.
Retribution, and here he's like this nerdy artist. In both movies, he has a terrible haircut, but he's an artist. It's Halloween night, and he's going to kill himself. So the same time he's jumping off a building, this gangster in a different location is being shot and set on fire. So it turns into one of those body transference things.
Ooh, all right.
And the gangster spirit jumps into the artist. He survives, but all these crazy killings start happening. It is wacky, trashy. It's one of those uncovered gems from the 80s where I couldn't believe I hadn't seen it before, but it just gives you so much hope that you're going to keep finding awesome movies the rest of your life, like after you think you've seen all the good ones.
I love it. Well, and in this day and age of, you've got all these great media companies like, well, there's obviously Arrow and Scream Factory.
Vinegar Syndrome.
You've got Vinegar Syndrome, Severin. Mm-hmm. Second Sight still does a lot of the big stuff, but particularly, yeah, Vinegar Syndrome, Severin. Even if you're looking at you know, great classic Asian action films as well, you've got Terracotta, you've got Eureka, you've got A8 Films. So all these companies are really uncovering these movies for us. I feel like helping with that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Totally. Well, if Retribution gets a Blu-ray release, I am getting it.
You're
I'm going
to
buy it. And I'm usually not one to get like a higher quality release.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I need to see that.
Well, I have to give you a couple things. Sorry.
Okay.
So
yes.
There's bad art, gushing blood. There's a little person at a party who's Tony Cox.
Yay.
There's death by kitchen appliances. It just has so many good things going on.
So one thing I love about your next.
Yes.
The blender.
Oh my God, so good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these are all like possessed kitchen appliances.
Oh, even better. Okay. Mm-hmm. I hate it when that happens. Just think you're making dinner and dinner makes you. All right. I also saw Evil Dead Rise.
Me too.
Lee Cronin, who's only directed a handful of things, and he's an Irish guy, and I think he directed a film in Ireland that's I've not heard of, and some shorts, some TV stuff. This is easily his first major film, and I thought it was awesome.
Me too.
I thought it was fantastic.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thoroughly enjoyed. Somehow,
the two women leads, they crushed.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Somehow they make an apartment, I guess it's a, what would you even call that? It's more than an apartment, like a tenement almost, feel smaller or just as small as a cabin. They do a really good job of making it feel very, 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 very claustrophobic.
Ooh, good analogy. And or good point.
I really just was, I was going to let myself go for the ride because I think originally 10 years ago when we walked into the Evil Dead remake, you know, that's hallowed ground to tread upon, mm-hmm. right? But I thought that Fede Alvarez did a fantastic job with the remake. The remake was amazing.
Oh, we were both fans of his.
We were huge Evil fans. Dead. In the theater, I mean, I saw it in the theater, thank goodness, because that's where you need to see that movie.
Yeah,
and
it's
I also
scary.
Made sure that I saw Evil Dead Rise in the theater as well, because mm-hmm. these are big screen horror movies. And it's Lily Sullivan who's the main female lead, the protagonist, I guess, and she's great in it.
Oh my gosh. The sister who gets possessed, though, the mom.
Oh, yeah.
Her face as
Alyssa
a deadite.
Yeah.
Is truly haunting.
It is. It's everything you want in an Evil Dead movie. It doesn't try to surpass the gore of the remake, but it gives you some creative scenes, lots of good, well-earned jump scares. I mean, it was everything I wanted it to be, and I feel like we talked about this before, and we all have different feelings about horror franchises. I still stand by the fact that when you look at, in totality, Evil Dead, the franchise is incredibly consistent.
You might be right.
Incredibly consistent.
Like, I've always said Final Destination, but I think you might be right, Carrie.
I mean, Final Destination is great as well, but as far as like quality and consistency, oh man, it was great. So yeah, if I never saw another horror movie this year, that would probably sweep my awards.
Yeah, it's actually surprised me that I have a couple friends who love Evil Dead and they didn't like this movie. And
interesting.
Yeah, they chalked it up to not really having a sense of humor and not really thinking maybe the lead had as much charisma.
Hmm.
But I thought it was
so great. I totally disagree. Now the comedy is really dark and it only hits you a few times.
I think the comedy's there, yeah.
But it's definitely there. But these are, you know, since the remake, the franchise has chosen to go in a slightly different direction, but Sam Raimi is still the shepherd of this franchise, and he's been with it every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have no issue with the fact they've kind of pulled back on the comedy a little bit and just gone for the gusto.
Yeah. And do we think there's more blood featured in this movie than featured in the others, or no?
Because
you classically think of Evil Dead 2 as having like every color of blood just all over
yes.
the place.
In 2013, the remake was the most blood ever on screen at that time. I think that's been beaten or surpassed. So if anyone on our social media or anything like that wants to respond to which film now has the most blood on screen, in 2023.
Are we saying it's got to be real, not CG blood? Not real blood, but like real liquids.
Yeah, yeah. Because anyone could do, you know, a billion gallons of CG blood. But yeah, actual. Because in this one is real. Or it's a real liquid.
All right, cool. All right, we want to know the most blood. Who is it?
Yep, tell us. Help us.
I just have one more. So Jason and I watched Gator Bait, which, if you want to see a version of I Spit on Your Grave, where they try to make the villains kind of hilarious and crack jokes, even though it's pretty horrifying, and you put in all these Benny Hill-type motorboat chases.
Is this the one where the sister gets attacked and the older sister goes after him?
Kind of. They're after the older sister the whole time.
Right.
And this terrible, like, killing accident happens. I would still recommend it, though. It's so grimy and weird, and the two scenes that would upset someone the most are not too long.
Right. I believe I have seen this. I believe it's been about 4 or 5 years. I think it was one of those all-night movie marathons we'll do at times. And I'm so pretty sure I've seen it. It vaguely, you know, comes to memory, but a lot of fun.
Well, tell me this, Carrie. Have you seen Gator Bait 2, Cajun Revenge?
I can definitively say no.
I don't even know if we should watch it. Jason pulled up a picture and he's like, it looks like a porn. And I'm like, I think maybe so. But with a title like that, I'm still curious.
Yeah. I mean, those movies tend to devolve into that anyway, if you go for enough sequels, you mm-hmm. know?
Well, that's where we are so far. And now we're going to talk about summer movies. We wanted movies that were like set in the summer or about the summer. We didn't want to limit it to camp.
No.
And we decided we weren't allowed to use Friday the 13th movies or Sleepaway Camp.
Nope. Too easy.
Or Jaws.
They've been done too much. We love them, but there's plenty of coverage on those.
Yeah, we wanted to, I mean, I don't think any of my picks are like deep hidden things, but we wanted to go like right below the big ones that we all love.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, I did pick one that's definitely a pretty big one, but I do want to bring it back up because I just love the film so much.
Do you want to kick it off?
Sure. So I'm going to start, I'm going to go new to old. We're going to start new to old. All right, so I think Midsommar, or Midsommar, whichever you want to say, is an excellent summer movie.
Yes.
And especially because you think of summer and it's light out, well, most of the movie happens during the daytime. Most of the events of the film occur during the daytime, aside from the notable exception of the scene where he finds the book in the darkness and you get the little Leatherface moment.
Mm-hmm. I love Midsommar. Watched it multiple times.
Both the 3-hour cut, the unrated cut, and the regular cut, both great.
Okay, call me out as a fake fan. I've yet to see the long cut, but I'm gonna watch it.
It's not like it's drastically different. It adds some plot points in, but I don't think you have to see it to appreciate. I don't think, yeah.
I put that as my runner-up movie. It almost made the cut, and I have a suspicion one of my other runner-up movies, the only reason I didn't include it was because I was very hopeful you were going to include it.
So, I think it really signifies, it's one of the great summer movies, I would say, probably of all time. I mean, it's that good a film in the horror genre anyway. So.
Oh, totally. I definitely think this is going to stand the test of time.
Oh, yeah. What's going to be fun is the next generation is going to discover it after it's kind of fallen away. People don't talk about it much, and then it'll have a resurgence later on.
Mm.
Yep, just great. Also, I did think it was kind of interesting. I was looking into it a little bit deeper. Some of the traditions shown in the film are actually based in real life, which obviously Ari Aster is pretty. He has a lot of attention to detail. So he's going to do these things. So the pubic hair in the food, the menstrual blood and liquid. Evidently, those things are based on, you know, real that actually has happened, evidently.
Oh, my God.
In some of these cults or some of these religions or, you know, these
That is
these
so time-tested gross things. And cool.
yeah, it is.
Whoever did the folk art for that movie is an incredible artist.
It's brilliant.
I keep meaning to look it up, and I don't think I know who it is.
Aster wrote a 100-page Bible on the history of this cult for the movie. Some of the actors didn't even know that existed. Maybe none of them even got to read it, but it exists. Yes, that's great.
Incredible.
Love it.
So my first pick is Society from 1989
by
Brian Usna, or should I say the Dream Team from Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, Brian Usna and Screaming Mad George. So this story is set in Beverly Hills, and there's this teen Billy? I can't remember, actually. He suspects there's something not right with his rich family. They're unaccepting of him. I guess I'm just going to give you a spoiler. He thinks they're, like, kind of incestuous, and it turns out they absolutely are. It ends in a gnarly orgy cult.
That is, and by the way, if I can just interject for a second, that is one of the great, shocking end scenes in horror film history.
Yeah, I mean, it throws down the best use of the word butthead that's ever been played.
Yep.
There are some choice scenes, like summary scenes. There's one where they're on a beach. The girlfriend's laying out in the sand. These boys come up and douse the girlfriend in sunblock ocean, and Bill goes after them. Then another hot bikini-clad girl blasts him in the face with sunblock lotion. There are a lot of gooey shenanigans. I've tried to weave society into other things we've done. I thought about suggesting, like, the evil rich or weird adopted kids in horror.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very literal carnal depiction of America's wealthy elite.
Yep.
Preying upon the rest of us.
Before, you know, now that's a pretty well-worn horror trope at this point. We're doing it. That's been a big focus. I think really starting with the pandemic, maybe a little bit before, there's a lot more focus on the, you know, the wealth iniquity.
Mm-hmm.
But in 89, or was it 88, 89 when that came out?
Yeah.
You didn't have all that. That wasn't as much of a focus for horror.
It felt like rich people were more of a hilarious, like, yuppie thing than they are today.
Yes. All right. You know, so I've got four, but I'll really mention three for the most part. One is, okay, this one's a little bit of a deeper cut. I mean, if you're a big horror fan, you know about this film, whether you've seen it or not. Just Before Dawn, it's the 1981 Jeff Lieberman film. And Lieberman, I think, is sort of a pretty underrated cult film director, primarily in the 80s and 70s. So he started with, he did Squirm, the worm movie in the early 70s.
I think I can see the cover in my mind, but I've never seen Squirm.
Yeah, it was like 76. I think I saw it when I was a kid. Then he did Blue Sunshine, which is weird. Hippies take a bunch of acid when they're younger, and then later they start going bald and killing people. That's a really weird cult classic. And they also did Remote Control, young Kevin Dillon and young Jennifer Tilly, where he works at a video store, and there's a videotape, a VHS tape, that will control your mind. The Remote Control is awesome. I watched it with Mark Weathersby and Drew
years ago.
And I'd never seen it, and they turned me on to it, and it's great. It's silly and fun. It's very much a Carpenter vibe all the way. It's great.
I am racking my brain, but I'm 99% sure I've never seen Just Before Dawn.
So it's not, I mean, there was a slew of backwoods horror movies. Just as when Wrong Turn came out, that genre came back. So you had Don't Go in the Woods in 81, you had Just Before Dawn 81, and then 83 had Final Terror, which I have has a soft spot in my heart, because I watched that as a kid on gnarly VHS tape that I ran from the video store I worked at, Kangaroo Video here in Athens. Shout out to my Kangaroo crew.
Oh, I wish I could have gone.
I know, you should have been here for Kangaroo. Oh, man. So it's basically five kids going to the woods. It's the classic slasher setup. The people out there in the country where they go, way out in the forest, are not happy they're there, obviously. They act like jackasses. They throw food around and, you know, they just act like, you know, entitled idiots. And they pretty much get their due from the local, maybe inbred family that's kind of lives near where they are camping. And really what it is one of the characters has been deeded some land in these forests. And as a realtor myself, this is my day job, it's pretty sketchy to go on just a paper deed in the 80s in the middle of the woods with a bunch of friends and your plans get wasted and then check out like and do some due diligence on your property. Not a good idea. I would bring, you know, your attorney along with you, maybe get a surveyor, you know, maybe an inspector. I don't know. There's a lot of other people I would have brought as opposed to a bunch of drunk friends. To do that, and it doesn't go well. So there's beautiful, beautiful shots, lots of great scenery, and then you see there's a little bit of the what happens when, you know, civilization goes into the woods. Do you become a little bit primal? Well, maybe that'll happen to some of the characters. So Just Before Dawn's a lot of fun. It's doesn't have a huge body count, and it's not you know, there's no big effects, but I think it's really effective and a lot of fun.
I am Jeff Lieberman ignorant. I need to watch a bunch of stuff.
I think you got to. And he did Satan's Little Helper, which I also never saw. That's a newer one that I've heard is also kind of good. It's, again, sort of cult horror movie-ish kind of thing.
Newer, like in the 2000s?
Yeah, last 20 years.
Okay. Man, well then I'm going to say he's still going.
I think so. So yeah, there we go on that one.
All right. So my next pick was Tourist Trap from 1979.
Oh my God, I love this movie.
I know! A group of young friends get stranded away from the main highway. They're like sweaty and skinny dipping. There's a water moccasin infested swimming hole. And then this rando pulls up and befriends them, kind of, whisks them away to his bizarre, empty roadside attraction that's full of, like, life-size figurines. And, you know...
That's the score, sorry.
Yeah. You know what? Have you seen Chuck Connors? Is it Connors and something else?
He's been in... I'll bet if you look at his filmography, it's probably 100 movies. I think he's been acting for 50, 60 years, something like that.
I read that he was most famous for the 60s show The Rifleman. He looks so familiar to me, but I haven't seen him in that. I've not seen that. So.
No, neither have I.
Well, anyway, I think this is like a real deal creeper movie. Clearly very low budget. How is it rated PG?
It's great. Well, you know, but the gore is really low key when you think about it. As creepy as it is.
It has to be the freakiest PG movie out there.
Oh, yeah. I'll agree with that.
He and these hostile mannequins. My other note on it is it's a Charles Band production.
It is one of the first Full Moon movies ever.
And as you know, on My Bloody Horror Cast, we love Full Moon, particularly the Puppet Master franchise.
Yes, we do. Recently, I've decided I need to go back and watch Subspecies again because it's been a long time since I was like in middle school, I think, that I watched that franchise.
Man, you know what it really bums me out? I remember, did you watch early 2000s House of Wax, like Paris Hilton?
I think some of it, yeah.
The greatest promo of all time, come see Paris die on t-shirts.
Which is, right, that is great. A little bit of it.
I didn't hate it, but when I was rewatching Tourist Trap ahead of this episode, I'm just like, man, if they'd just been a little weird and a little more colorful, House of Wax, the remake could have been awesome.
But that was during the time where all the remakes were coming back. There was, The Prom Night, and there was Black Xmas, which is your favorite film of all time.
We're going to do a remake episode because we both have strong feelings.
Particularly about that franchise, I don't know, or that one movie. It's not even a franchise. No, it's great. It's great. Tourist Trap is, and I have just a grimy old VHS copy, and I tend to like the, you know, I'm trying to buy a lot, all my stuff in 4K now, and UHD, and the, you know, the Blu-ray, you know, the ultimate Blu-ray stuff, but I mean, I love going back and watching. I feel like that's a movie you should be watched in just grainy.
Dude, VHS collectors are now like vinyl collectors. It's such a thing. I look at the price of some like horror VHSs, and it kind of makes me want to puke, but at the same time, I think it's really cool that it's so out there.
Oh, I forgot to bring you that Halloween, the blockbuster version of Halloween on VHS. I have that for you at the house.
Cool. Okay. Carrie, I'll show you right after this. I have two copies of Halloween on VHS.
Do you have the blockbuster version?
I don't, though.
Well, there you go.
Thank you so much. All right. What is your third pick?
Okay, so I'm trying to decide, because you had mentioned you thought one of these I might...
I thought you were going to pick...
Right. So I'm open to whatever. Here, we'll go with that one. So we're going to stick in 1981. A lot of good horror came out in 81, by the way. It's also the year Friday 13th Part 2, as I recall. So, The Burning. So, just as 1980s Friday 13th was taking off, and really that trend had started with Halloween 78 2 years earlier, here you come to 81, 3 years past that, and you're already, we're in full slasher mode, is all on. It's on and popping. You got Prom Night hit in 80, so many things, so many movies. In a very short amount of time, the studios just capitalized on that trend. So The Burning is, I think it died in theaters because it just seemed like it was literally the most basic Friday 13th ripoff. It takes place at a camp, there's a killer, all that. But it's a pretty different movie. It's a very different horror film. It's based on the Cropsey legend.
It's a very well-made horror movie with a beautiful soundtrack.
It is. And one of the earliest Miramax films before we knew what an awful human being. I won't even say his name. Doesn't even deserve to have his name mentioned. But back when Miramax was cutting edge, just getting going, this is one of the early ones. So also a very early appearance of Jason Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Way pre-Seinfeld, like what, 8 years before Seinfeld, nine years. But it's really good. It's atmospheric. It's the acting's actually pretty good. There's some interesting legend with the Cropsey legend. And it's well shot. So it has pretty high production values, which is also kind of, to me, kind of confusing as to why nothing happened with it. Also, there's the notorious raft scene, which is still a shocker today.
I rewatched a little bit of The Burning just because I knew it had to come up for a summer movie episode. It's so good. I was just thinking, though, don't you think it's like now horror 101? If someone during the summertime, you and your friends, they're like, let's do some pranks. No way will they get out of hand. You just have to say no.
No, no way. You should know better. You should know better. Oh, think about Terror Train a year earlier, mm-hmm. as well. 1980. I
know. Oh, so good.
What a great, I mean, when you look at 78 to even maybe 83, 84, what a span of time for that particular genre of horror. Good grief.
Oh, The Burning. Great pick.
Yep, classic one. Okay, what you got?
Okay, so my last official pick, it was kind of hard to narrow it down, and I'm not even sure this counts. It's a vacation home for sure. Is it summer? I think so. But I went with 1997's Funny Games.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
And honestly, the remake is basically the same thing, but with Naomi Watts. And I gotta say, I'm a fan of both versions. If you've never seen either, it kind of doesn't matter. Like, which one you go with. They're both pretty good and the same, but this couple's at their summer vacation home. These two supposed neighbors drop by, and they have this like really menacing way of being polite, and it just keeps escalating. Okay, so I rewatched this one too because I'm like, is this a summer movie? I kind of think so. I don't know. The brown haired dude looks like Alex Honnold, the rock climber. Like from Free Solo.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get over it.
What a great movie.
And I kind of wonder, since I saw this first, if it didn't like color my opinion of him when I watched Free Solo, because I mean, he kind of comes off as like a not super affectionate person. And I'm like, but I probably had Funny Games at the back of my mind too.
Well, hopefully he wasn't torturing a family. I know. I like to think he wasn't. He seemed like a nice enough guy.
Oh, okay. One spoiler I'm going to throw out is as soon as the dog shows up, you know it's like not a good thing.
Mm-mm.
But Funny Games totally blew my mind the first time I saw it. I went in thinking it was one thing and then another thing, and then it messes with the fourth wall in a way that you hadn't seen done like at that point.
Mm-mm.
Where I was just like, oh my God, this rules.
I mean, it's total and complete nihilism. I mean, it's rare that a movie goes that hard to just be as chaotic and insane and just mean as possible.
Yeah, it's like the art film The Strangers.
Right. Yeah.
But I know we both had honorable mentions. I mean, mine were The Burning and Midsommar, and I had, you know, a couple more, but did you have some?
I do have one. So I just dropped Just Before Dawn on y'all. And I think it's worth seeing. I'm not going to say it's the greatest, again, but it's really fun. It's a great timestamp for that era. Triangle is an honorable mention. I almost threw that in the middle. This is another film that I don't know many people have seen it. When I talk about Triangle, most people have not seen it.
It has the time travel stuff, right?
Time loop, yep.
Yep.
It's a loop. So yeah, it's Melissa George when she was just kind of getting into the film thing, or just kind of getting well known. And It's one of those. So I think any time loop film, you're going to have some issues with how does this all make sense if you really try to break everything down. So I actually looked at a bunch of breakdowns, and really ends up you have four versions of each character, particularly her character, that you're going to see through this film. But it is, I think it's really neat, and I think it does a good job with very limited special effects. The director is Christopher Smith, and he's done a handful of films. Severance was one of his films, actually. And Black Death, which are,
I mean, those sound familiar
both,
to me,
both
but I
really good, but they were bigger across the pond, I believe, than they were here. He also did this year's Consecration, which I have not watched yet, but he's done a lot of stuff at this point. So Triangle basically is it's a mother who is really stressed out, watching over her autistic son. She has some guilt because she's getting mad at him, feels like she shouldn't. On the day that they go out, she goes out with some friends on their yacht. and they're just going to go just get a break, just get some time away. Well, that doesn't go well. The yacht overturns. They find what appears to be an abandoned ship out near where their boat overturns. They go onto the ship, and things get real weird. And they think they're alone on the ship, but they're not actually alone. And so that's when, and then you start to see these loops going back and back and back. And through that, you start to try to figure out what's actually happening. There is a masked killer on board the boat, but you don't know who it is mm-hmm. or in what time loop that killer is from.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it goes back maybe a few loops, and it could be endless loops, but for this particular story. And so I think there's a lot of kind of fun trying to figure out what's actually going on. And then the overall plot or theme of the story of the movie is kind of interesting too. You know, loss and grief are big themes in horror, but there's also the sense of, you know, kind of maybe helplessness that this woman feels in her life. And kind of the idea of Sisyphus rolling the boulder mm-hmm. up the hill, you know, which it feels like she's doing the whole film. So I won't get into it too much, but I think Triangle's pretty cool. You know, I wouldn't sit there and try to break it down too much, but if you want to go online, see some breakdowns, they make some sense. They really do flesh it out. I should probably
rewatch it and then check out those breakdowns because I take a long time to unpack things.
There's a lot of fan theories out there about Triangles. There's no shortage of material to and message boards.
Who directed that?
It's Christopher Smith.
That's right. You just said. What else did he do?
Well, Black Death is one with Sean Bean that came out in 2010. It's really good. Severance was always considered a really good one. I have not seen Severance, but that came out in 2006. That got really good reviews when it did.
I haven't seen that either.
A movie called Creep, not
oh, the not newer Netflix Creep.
Not Netflix Creep, but an earlier one from the aughts with Franco Potenta and Sean Harris. So some well-known actors in that. So yeah, and then he's done a bunch of stuff. I mean, yeah, tons of different things.
I guess I'll have to look it up because Triangle was good. I mean, if we weren't a horror movie podcast and we're just a genre movie podcast, and we did an episode on like time loops or time travel, mm-hmm. Triangle would definitely be up there.
Oh yeah, and again, it's one of those films not a lot of people have seen, from what I can tell. So yeah. What you got is an honorable mention.
Okay, well, besides...
I know Burning in Midsummer. That just shows, you know, kind of our similar tastes that we have.
Yeah, because those movies are just awesome.
They're just great, yeah.
Well, so my wonderful friend Christy reminded me, Creepshow 2, The Raft.
I was going to mention it. I feel like the rest of Creepshow doesn't quite fit the summer theme, even if they are in summer, but that one is, I mean, there you go. Right
I know.
There.
And I went, so I didn't rewatch Creepshow 2, even though I own it. And we've screened it at Flickr.
Yes.
But I did read the short story. It is gross and creepy. It kind of is like a Lovecraft creature story, the oil slick thing.
Yes.
So
I remember seeing that as a kid and just being absolutely terrified watching mm-hmm. it. Still today, it's a great installment.
Oh, if I'm looking at, like, Dark Waters, I am not getting in there. I have to be able to see what's going on.
yeah. Certainly don't fall asleep on it. Just make a run for it or make a swim for it, I guess, because don't delay the inevitable. Just go for it.
Oh, man. Well, my last honorable mention was, we also disagreed on this. I really loved Jordan Peele's movie Us, and that opening scene at, like, the carnival mm-hmm. and that freaky fun house. I just thought that was such a spooky opening. It feels like such a classic horror moment.
I really I actually liked a lot of Us. I think it's one of those movies where I needed to have seen it again to fully appreciate it, which I think is part of I think every Jordan Peele film needs to be watched multiple times to really get, because there's so much. I mean, it's so, everything's so dense. There's a lot he packs into these films, a lot of themes, a lot of ideas. So while I didn't like it as much as you, it's not like I didn't like it. I mean, I don't think I was as enamored by it, but there are some scenes I still think about in my head. That, I mean, the Beach Boys soundtrack, where we're upstairs in the house, you know?
Oh my God.
It's great.
Ugh. Jordan Peele, what is he doing next? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm sure something's coming. I'll bet we're going to start to see, too, is him doing more production as well. And things like that. But I can't wait for the next film.
Yeah, me either.
Obviously, it doesn't seem like we're going to get one this summer, but I'm hoping that by next summer we'll have another Peele film. Seems like every 2 years he's doing something. Every 2-3 years, so.
Yeah, give him some time.
Hopefully in 24. We're saying, Jordan, just, you know, we're just asking.
I also feel pretty out of the loop. Do you know any new horror movies coming out that you're, like, really psyched about besides the ones we kind of...
Well, The Blackening just came out, and I saw a preview for The Blackening at Evil Dead Rise, and that seems like a lot of fun.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So you've got an entire, I think, from what I can tell, entirely black cast in The Blackening, and they're playing on the horror tropes of, the classic horror trope of, you know, the black person dies first, and this one they're like... Well, who's it going to be? I mean, there's, you know, somebody's going to have to be the first person.
Yeah.
So, which I think is kind of funny in and of itself. But evidently, that's pretty funny. The preview looked good. You know, as we talked about before in our last episode, there's a lot of stuff hitting in fall that I think is going to be big. There's some of the big sequels, like, or big remakes, Exorcist. There's a bunch of others that I know we mentioned some last time, but we'll have to pop those back up soon. And maybe we can even throw that out there on a post on our Instagram or something like that.
Well,
but yeah, second half of the year I think is going to be bonkers.
I want this summer to keep being bonkers, though. It turns out there's a lot of summer horror that I haven't seen before that I want to catch up on. I got some good recommendations, and then I was digging back into my Letterboxd watch list.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow Lunchmeat VHS?
No.
Okay. I didn't think I did. It turns out I do. And Instagram has been so effective in putting this account, like, to the top of my feed all the time.
Okay.
And so for a little bit, I wanted to see this movie called Killer. And then it popped up because a friend reviewed it in Letterboxd recently. So I think it's going to be my first Lunch Meat purchase.
Ooh,
I have to see it. You can't see this, listeners, but I'm showing Carrie the cover.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I just love it. I'd love to watch it with friends.
I'm with it. Well, I'm down with it.
Yeah, maybe we can screen it at Flickr.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we talked about some good summer horror movies. If y'all have not seen those, I would recommend checking the ones you haven't seen out.
Yeah, for sure. And more. Carrie, have you seen these movies? Twisted Nightmare, Moonstalker, or Madman?
Madman March, 1981.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's great.
Okay.
Another great slasher from 81. Good grief.
81.
Or it might be 82. Either way, close enough.
Oh, man. Well, my friend Jen, who also listens to our podcast from time to time, she had this list of summer horror movies, and I'm like, I am intrigued because I have not seen any of these.
No.
So no. Maybe this will be my summer of, like, going back through my Letterboxd watch list and checking out all the recs I've meant to for a while.
And yes, Madman was 81. It was, in fact, in 1981.
You've got such a good memory.
What a year. Well, memory and IMDb. But yes. So, all right. Well, there's our summer movie wrap-up. And we promise it will not be too long before we have another episode out there for you.
Yeah. We'll see you fall at the latest.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Bye.
Bye.